Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne. I'm your host, I'm a comedian, I'm a writer, and I'm half of a scummy mummy. And you know what? I don't give any fucks if you think my thighs are big. Joining me today is the amazing Arabella Weir. Hello, Arabella.
Hello, Helen.
How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Thank you for joining me here.
It's my huge pleasure.
In the fat studio for fat people. Now, you've been on the wonderful Scummy Mummies podcast, but I've invited you along today because you've written amazing books, but also you inspire people through your comedy, through your writing, and just for being goddamn fabulous.
Thank you very much.
Now, for those of you who don't know Arabella, you've been an amazing comedian, writer and actress. You've probably seen her on The Fast Show, maybe on Grumpy Old Women. I was thinking about that this morning, actually. I think that's when I really fell in love with you. I loved that show, and that was about 10 years ago?
I think it probably ended about 10 years ago, but it started, didn't it? Sort of about 15, 16 years ago, became a huge thing. Somebody reviewed Grumpy Old Women and said something that made me laugh out loud. They said, because the brand started with grumpy old men.
Yes.
And the person who was a male TV reviewer said, you watch this and you just think they're just a bunch of old farts. Mm. And then you watch the women and you think everything they say is perfectly reasonable.
Well, that's right, because I would have been about 25, and I remember watching it just thinking this is one of the most exciting things I've ever seen, because it was honest and funny, and I just thought, I just want to hang out with all these women. Like, for once, old women weren't just like, you know, Hyacinth Bouquet. Like, it was sort of gritty, and I think a bit kind of groundbreaking, because you gave no fucks, and it was so, as a young person, I thought, it's not all doom and gloom ahead of me, even though you were kind of complaining about things.
I think there was a lot of complaining, but I think
there's... But there was a camaraderie, and there was a kind of like, oh.
And I think what was finally, and as you say, I mean, it sounds a bit weird to say groundbreaking, but finally there were women on television not being pretty assistants, sexy nurses, old battle axes. They were just sort of going, yeah, this is the sort of thing annoys me. I can't bear this. I don't like that. And we were just sort of telling it like it is, instead of, oh, well, you'll be playing a character who really finds this man who's 40 years more older than you more attractive, and, you know, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think it was liberating in that way, because there was no kind of, oh, can you say some fun, nice things? It was just say all the things that really annoy you.
Yeah.
So that was, one of my favourites was they said, well, what makes you happy? And I really had to think about it. You know, I already had children. Obviously, my children make me happy. But at that stage, you know, there was quite a lot of, quite a lot of work compared to the happiness going in. A lot of work going in, minimal happiness coming out, and a lot of complaining coming out. And I went, oh, I know what makes me happy. An unfranked stamp. And I genuinely meant it, and it still makes me happy.
Like you've won a prize.
Yes, it's just fantastic. 68p up, get in.
Soak it off, as my mother would say. But yeah, I think that's when I first discovered you. And then, of course, through The Fast Show and other things.
And does my bum look big in this? That must have been something that spoke to you, I am assuming.
I think so, because I, from the get-go, I've always been a big person. I was one of five in my family. I was the fourth and was the biggest. And so I had family members always commenting on my...
Your siblings or your parents?
My siblings more than anything else.
Really?
So I had three brothers who would say, oh God, things like, oh, I hope when I have daughters they don't have fat thighs like you. Or brother once said, have you ever thought about losing weight? Because then you'd look really beautiful. So things like those sort of...
Oh, my giddy aunt.
Shit. Let's just call them shit things.
Have you ever thought about having your head kicked in? Because yeah. then you'd look shit, which is how you ought to look.
So whenever there was talk about body image or, you know, does my bum look big in this, as your wonderful catchphrase, that just struck a massive chord because when you're told you're fat, as you have so beautifully written about in your book, you just believe it. You just think, well, that's...
Well, you know you're fat.
Yeah.
I mean, you never mind believe. You know you're fat. You know you're less good than the girls
yeah.
that... aren't fat, and you know you'd be incredibly happy and everything would be fine if only you were thinner.
Yeah.
Because then there's so much wrapped up with greed as well.
Mm.
Because, and I think I'm very much hope, I don't know about body image, but certainly women's entitlement, I hope little by little will be changing with the Me Too movement. Because I think the you eat too much, in inverted commas, which means you're greedy, and women aren't allowed to be greedy because women are supposed to be taking up less space in every possible way, and they're certainly not supposed to be having the pudding, the extra bit of sandwich, whatever it is. Whereas for a guy to do that, it's an entirely different thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's a lot tied up with you're just taking too much space.
Mm.
There's you're meant too to much
slip,
of you.
Slip through. You're meant to be a shadow. You're meant to be, yes, an accompaniment, a side plate.
Exactly. A side, not a plate, thank you very much, a side lettuce leaf with no dressing.
That's right. A teeny cake for...
Complimenting the huge steak that is your male counterpart.
Yes, indeed. So I like to start, let's start the meat of the podcast by asking our guests about how your relationship is with your body now, like today. How do you feel about your body, Arabella?
I would say, I'm sorry to say, listeners, that I'm probably still have mixed feelings in as much as I don't diet, I do watch what I eat, but I don't diet. I would... not be likely to wear even a middle-aged woman's bikini, but I no longer care what everybody else on the beach is going, oh dear, look at her. I just probably wouldn't be having much fun running to the sea and sort of feeling my stomach wobble and my thighs, which would be the two big things that would wobble. But I certainly don't go, oh, if I'm thinner, I'll be happier. I've lost all that kind of neurotic attachment to weight. But I do a lot of exercise and I've accepted that I'm clearly never supposed to be thin. That I dare say you could take me and another woman and I could have a glass of milk and stay alive for a month and she wouldn't.
Yeah.
So I've accepted that. And I'm not at the sort of, yeah, and I'll wear a strapless dress and wave my arms around going, have you seen the undercarriage? I wouldn't be doing that. So there's no pride, but there's no shame.
Now, going back, because I really want to talk about your amazing book, which I just sort of finished last night, The Real Me is Thin. Why did you want to share your early stories and why did you think it was important to, because your childhood in many stages quite painful and your relationship with your food and your mother and all the things. Anyway, I'll let you say it because you'll say it in a much better way.
Comedy, it being analytical about it, and I hope not too boring, but comedy was, I didn't know it, but was clearly my coping mechanism from a very young age in this quite dysfunctional and incredibly competitive parents, both of them, very competitive, and they pitched me and my siblings all against each other. And there was very much the idea that there was a finite amount of love and that, you know, if you displease them, and in my case that would be being chunky, then you obviously couldn't expect to be as loved as the boy, for example, that just got into Oxford. That was just, I mean, they didn't even think about that. That was just an obvious thing. And so I learned to be funny very early on, and apparently I was. And then I went to school and was very funny and already not a thin girl, not a sort of huge one, but, you know, the chunkier of the gangs of mates. So, but, you know, did self-deprecating stuff and then was very sort of wise ass. Then got into comedy and then always thought... as an actor slash comedian, well, I'd be better, I'd be funnier, people would like me more if I were thinner, because I was still locked into that kind of self-worth thing. Then I came up with Does My Bum Look Big in This, which, to my huge delight and enormous pleasure, became a kind of, you know, a catchphrase everybody used. And then I realised that all women, whatever they looked like,
yeah,
felt that they were the wrong size, that if only their boobs were perky and only their bum was smaller and their knees were this. And there's so much. So that I came up with that catchphrase 25 years ago. And then I wrote that book, Does My Bum Look Big in This, that was all jokes. And it was all jokes about fat stomachs and blah, blah, blah. I mean, her fat stomach, yeah, not, so not ever at anybody else's expense.
Yeah, so that's a fiction book about a... Yeah. Yeah.
And then, sort of 10 years later, no, a bit more, and my mum had died by this time, both my parents had died, I had the idea of doing, as it were, what the psychology behind Does My Bum Look Big in This had been, where it had come from. So I wrote The Real Me Is Thin, because I suppose I always thought, this is not the body I'm supposed to be in. I'm supposed to be in a thin body, but why can't I get there? Why is the fat me's eaten the thin me and it won't let me out, won't the thin girl out? So that was the motivation. I guess, I mean, I'm pretty combative and I certainly had a very combative relationship with my mother. So I probably would have written the book if she'd been alive, but it just so happened that she wasn't alive anymore. And I wrote the book. And yeah, it's looking back, there's quite a lot of it that is quite painful. But then you'll know better than most, Helen. I think if you've learnt, I don't think you would ever be interested, one would ever be interested in making strangers laugh if there weren't some pain behind. Yeah. I mean, that's where comedy comes from. It doesn't. I had a fantastic upbringing. I was really loved by my parents. I married my first boyfriend who just adored me, and it's been great since then. I don't think that's where comedy comes from.
Not at all. No. That's, and I think that's been basically the essence of the Scummy Mummies. It comes from such pain and such awkwardness and all that sort of stuff. And I do lots of body stuff in the Scummy Mummies line show as well, and that just, and always subvert, I'm going, don't I look fabulous, look at this, you know, look at how wonderful my tits are, I've had two kids, all that sort of thing. And I feel that is so, I don't want to use the word empowering, but you just get the room with you. And I always say, look, I'm wearing my control pants, it gives me such a natural line, don't you love, you know, that sort of stuff. And so I think, and I find that cathartic for me, because every night I'm telling my story, and that reaches out to a whole group of women in a live audience. And I'm sure you felt the same writing the book, in that even some of the phrases that you use that the family has used, I've heard, if not from a person, but in my own head.
Yeah, well, we've all got the script going on in our head. Yeah. And they're only, you know, if they were saying something that didn't resound with you, you'd just go, what? And you'd forget they said it. It's the fact that when they criticise you, your family in particular, or other people, it resounds with something in your head. You're going, yeah, I kind of knew I wasn't really, allowed to be in here. I knew I was an outsider and they've just called me out.
Yeah, I know. And then that truth becomes the reality. One of the things I think that really struck me in the book in the early years was the relationship with food. And like you write about the dinner table and you not being allowed to have potatoes because and they actually said you can't have potatoes because you're fat, Arabella.
Yeah, well, they were Scottish, not that it's unique to Scottish parents, but I think it is quite British. The idea that if you humiliate somebody in public, I mean, it's the essence of all public schools. Mm. If you are humiliated in public, you will want to do better. But of course, so obviously...
What a great motivator.
It's a super little incentive.
Thank
you're
you for calling me fat.
Because you're fat. Oh, wow. Okay, shit. but I was too young when they started doing that. I mean, I know it seems incredible now because people talk about dieting and it's, you know, there are ads for it. But this is... I'm 61, so it's over about 50, a bit more than 50 years ago. And I literally didn't know at kind of 9 that food, that, I mean, obviously I knew that cream buns and you saw enormous people in the street, although not so much. But so I remember thinking, well, I don't understand because everybody else at the table's eating potatoes. So why are they kind of poisoned to me and not my siblings? Well, I think that's in the book too. My older brother, who was only, I suppose, about 11, said, but I'm a bit big and I'm allowed potatoes. And they said, that's different, you're a boy.
Wonderful. Great.
Yeah. So you already knew. So that's the message right there.
You're fat and a woman, so, you know.
We don't want fat women. Nobody wants fat women in the world. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But I there was quite a triumphant moment when you were, was it when you visited your father in America?
That's right.
Yeah. And he said, and you were going to a buffet and you're getting both rice and potatoes. And he yelled out, not rice and potatoes. And you, what did
no,
you
say? No, because he was very witty and sarcastic. He called out across, it was at a very grand buffet given by some very important people round a lake that they owned. And he said it across the lake. He went, rice and potatoes, darling, is that a good idea? And I just went, fuck off. And I was quite pleased with myself. I never in a million years would I have prepared myself to say that. But I was so humiliated. And, of course, I was wearing a swimsuit because it was a lake party. And I had, to her eternal credit, one of the stick-thin New York women, because it was in New York, said, quite right too. So I was quite pleased. I don't know who she was, but to this day I thought. And
you
then
had
he
ally.
Said,
"You had support. You had
yeah. They were all thin, these women, but not the thin women can't be your allies." But on the way back into New York, because it was in the suburb of New York, a suburb of New York, and on the way back, I was 13. I sort of got it together. So, Dad, you shouldn't say that sort of thing to me. But you know, I wish I can't say I was, you know, being girl powery or anything. I just thought he shouldn't say that sort of thing. And he said to me, darling, I can't help it if I want pretty girls around me.
I know.
That's then, not a good idea.
No, no.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Moving on from that, you went on to become an actress, mm-hmm. and you knew, and you speak about in the book about you knew that being funny was part of you, that being a clown was, again, a coping mechanism,
yeah.
And you could get attention that way, but also you could get love and adoration as well.
Yeah, you could get, I think I actually consciously worked out quite soon at school that if you were funny and sassy, that would override any kind of need to be pretty and thin,
yeah.
Because people would like you because you're just a laugh to have around and stuff, and you didn't have to worry about, well, I'm not going to be able to compete with the super pretty girls, so I'll see if I can compete, and I did rather well on the being sassy and, you know, funny and rude and, yeah.
Everyone loves the funny person. I knew that very early on too, that if I could make people laugh, it was some kind of a magic power that they wouldn't see the fat or it sort of overrode.
Yeah,
of
it's funny, so it becomes your armour.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember the words that people used to describe me was like, oh, she's a laugh, isn't she a classic? You wouldn't say she's sexy or isn't she beautiful. Like that they were the classifiers of who I was.
Wow.
But I was just like, oh, if I can be funny, then that is a value that people they want to and often it would be at my expense, or I would reveal too much about my parents or what they said. Oh, tell us more about, you know, hearing your parents having sex or something, which I shouldn't have told, but I would do anything for
Yeah. When you get hungry for laughter, you throw everybody under the bus to get more laughs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then my brother did this, and then my sister did this, which I shouldn't have told. And they weren't my stories to tell, but like, you get that taste for it. And you're like, no, I've got more. Come back.
Love me.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so obviously after high school, you went into acting. And I guess, you know, you paint a scene of, again, still the value being on the thin actress and not seeing any fat people or bigger people on the TV at that time.
There was one who shall remain nameless, because it's not fair anyway. Of my contemporaries, there was one big, not at all attractive. I mean, I'm not saying she wasn't attractive, you know, globally. I'm just saying she played ugly, what they would have in those days said slags.
Yeah.
Because she was big and she wasn't pretty and she was working class. And then everybody else was thin and pretty.
Yeah.
And there was no sort of middle ground. And when I started in 1979, people would be, I mean, directors, they were exclusively male, bar one that I worked with, and the men would say, you need to lose weight. But without any, I mean, now they wouldn't dare. They might be thinking it.
No, you'd punch them in the face.
But also they wouldn't, you could report them straight away. That guy asked me to lose weight. And they would just say, "Are you all the time?" I used to go, "Oh, you're very pretty, but you're not thin enough."
Oh, extraordinary!
And you know, and I was a burgeoning feminist at those times, thinking, "What's wrong with that sentence? And why aren't I allowed to say, why don't you go and fuck yourself?"
Yeah, and you probably knew in your guts, like you have that.
Then you're a desperate young actress going, "I need the job."
Yeah,
I want the job. I need the job. This is the validation.
Yeah, I am the square peg for the round hole.
Please give me the job. I'll be thin. I'll be pretty. I'll be. And how do you want me? As they used to say about actors.
Oh my gosh! And were there times where you wanted to starve yourself? Or, I mean, you talk about you had a friend who you calorie counted with at school.
Oh, no, I did. I yo-yo dieted for years. You know, one boiled egg a day, nothing, a glass of water, a bowl of cabbage. I went up and down the entire time.
Mm.
But the interesting thing was it never... I used to lose lots of weight and then was always thinking, but why don't I feel better? Why don't I feel happier?
Yeah.
Why hasn't this worked? This is supposed to be the magic key.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh. And I remember there was quite a sort of... I'd had a friend for a long time, a heterosexual male friend, and he worked abroad, and we used to see each other sort of, I don't know, you know, a few times a year for dinner. And he hadn't seen me since I'd lost a load of weight. And I turned up, and he kind of went, wow. And I went, oh, yeah, I've lost a load of weight. And I thought he was a mate. And he tried it on with me. And I said,
oh, yeah.
I said, but you've never tried it on with me. What are you doing?
Mm.
And he went, yeah, but you didn't look like this before. And I went, yeah, but I was still the same person. So you can go fuck yourself.
Good. Excellent.
I didn't find him attractive anyway. And I'm ashamed to say, had he been the object of my desire, I'd like to think I would have also said, get stuffed, but I might not have done.
And was there a light bulb moment, or was there a massive kind of turning point for you? Because obviously you had that in you. You're a strong person. You've got sass. Yeah. You've got fire in your belly. Was there something that someone said to you, or was there something that, fuck this shit, I'm over this?
No, I don't think, as I said at the beginning of the show, I don't think it's like I now go, yeah, girls, I'm like going on the beach in that micro bikini and I'm going to love it.
Love it all.
No, I think what happened is throughout the writing of Does My Bum Look Big in This, I literally thought, this is, no one's going to read this. And if they do, they're going to think I am bonkers.
Yeah.
So it was the huge success of that, which made me realize that every woman is thinking pretty much the same thing, whatever she looks like. Mm. I don't quite fit in. My tits aren't the right shape. All the, you know, they're all going to like that girl, not me. That was a huge, a very gradual, because the book became a bestseller. And then everyone went, oh, you wrote that. And I remember someone going, but anyway, you're not fat. And I went, that's not, you've missed the point. So it was knowing that so many women felt the same way, even though that was all sort of jokey. I think it was having kids, and in particular a daughter. I thought, I cannot bring her up.
No.
Thinking that the most important thing she needs to do is have a great figure.
Yeah.
And so, yes, and I would say, so not a light bulb moment so much as a dimmer.
Yeah.
A dimmer switch.
A flat nose. What are
slowly
those?
Being turned to full.
Yes. Well, that's so important because I think you think you're alone. You think you're alone for such a long time. And, you know, and the greatest power is sharing
of
your
course.
Story and having
anything.
That. Yeah. And
anything
having that,
shared.
That courage to share. Because I think, you know, I'm now in this, you know, part of Instagram and part of this Instagram movement with mothers. And one of the big things is that they like to talk about body image. And I went to Ellie and I were a part of this thing called the Warrior Woman photo shoot. And they said, you can be as naked as you like. And Ellie was like, well, we're going to be fully naked. And I was like, oh, okay. And so Ellie and I did this. We're all allowed to wear as much or as little clothes as we like. And it was part of this project. And Ellie and I decided to wear mini baby bells on our nipples. We had a fish finger necklace. And then we just held a bottle of gin in front of our bushes. And that was it. And we had this photo taken. But there was a whole lineup of women in. Some were wearing swimming costumes. Some were wearing just bras and knickers, others dresses. And they were all shapes and sizes, all ages, and all of them hated. They were all making apologies about
really?
How they looked. Even though it was meant to this being a empowering day and, you know, inspiring other people. Everyone's like, oh, God, oh, no, and I haven't shaved and, oh, my boobs are like this. And that was, for me, a bit of that kind of an awakening because I was like, but you look gorgeous. You've got the figure that I will never have. You've got this and you've got that. And they can't see it.
Women are very quick in all fields to go, oh, well, I mean, of course, I didn't get that job because I hadn't done the presentation properly and I hadn't actually read the backstory of that.
Just
whereas
yeah.
men go, I didn't get that job because that guy was a knob. And you go, is that really why you didn't get the job?
Yeah.
Maybe you were the knob.
Yeah.
Men go out, women go in.
It's the same in stand-up. You go backstage after like an open mic night and all the guys are like, oh, geez, the audience is really crap. And then you go out and smash it and they're really confused. How is the audience suddenly different? It's like, it's not that we had better jokes. It's like something, yeah, that I remember always blaming or they'd blame the lighting or it, never themselves.
Never. Right? Well, I know that seems to be a sort of male trait, doesn't it? It can't be me. It must have been that guy.
Yeah.
And I think it is also true. Have you not noticed? On the circuit, I don't think young female comedians do the look at me, I'm shit material as much as my generation did.
Yeah, I think
me,
that's really
Joe
changed.
Brand, Dawn, you know, it was all kind of, oh, look, I don't fit into this or I'm my size. You know, we did a lot of self-deprecating stuff and I don't think the younger comedians are inviting the audience to go, would you like to criticise my body shape?
No, I'll make you feel better because I'll be the shittest person in the room. That's my gift to you. Okay.
I don't think, yeah.
All right, now we're going to go into a quick fire round and then we're going to flog all the things that you want to flog.
Surely.
That's how that bit's going to work.
Absolutely.
All right.
Let's go. I'm ready. I'm strapped in.
Go! Arabella, what makes you feel sexy?
Ooh, sex.
Great. I like sex. It's just a lovely thing. What's your most favourite thing to put in your body?
A big cock.
Correct. you're nailing this. What's your most embarrassing body moment?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be farting when you have sex. Nobody wants to do that when they're on all fours. Doesn't matter how much someone likes you. If you're very lucky, they'll laugh out loud. Otherwise, you'll just have to kill them then and there because you can't fart in someone's. Depends where they are in relation
to
your bum.
Yes, exactly.
But no. That's probably the, or when you get those awful coming out of your vagina.
Oh, yes, the fanny fart.
Fanny fart. Oh. Very. I mean, there's no getting around that.
But that's when you need a sense of humour. Yes,
when
exactly.
You need a sense of humour.
Yeah.
Because if you're a girly girl, you're too girly girly. If you're too girly girly, then you're obviously going to have to kill him.
Yeah, or you should probably kill
yourself. Or yourself.
Yes, exactly right. What's the best thing people have said about you or your body? What gave you the ooh?
Well, I'm proud to say that quite a lot of people I've slept with, and there are a few, have said fucking amazing tits.
Yes!
And quite a few of them, depending on where they are geographically, have said, fantastic bum. One guy I slept with said, you have got the best vagina I've ever seen in my life. He didn't say vagina, because it was in delicto flagrante. But I did think, because that is, I don't want to see vaginas much myself, but he did say, my God, it's the best looking cunt I've ever seen. And I thought, well, that's quite nice, thank you.
fat facts. So I've scoured the internet, Arabella, for some very interesting facts about bodies. And this one I thought was kind of interesting is that if you've eaten too much, your hearing is less sharp. So if you overindulge in food, then you lose your hearing temporarily.
The thing that I've... if you're waiting for me to give you a fact, the thing I learnt long before I had children but managed to teach them, which was you can have as much as you want, but if you, after I've given you a meal or we've all eaten together, you have to wait 20 minutes before you're allowed more, because it takes 20 minutes for the message to get from your stomach to your brain.
Oh, see, that's where I've gone wrong.
That's delicious. Let's keep going.
I'll have some more mac and cheese because it just makes me feel very nice. But no.
20 minutes, you've got to wait.
And then you feel a bit sludgy. And that's probably why you've gone a bit deaf, because you're just like everything. You go into that weird sort of overindulgence.
That is really interesting.
It's a real... Yes, I know. I found that on the interweb. So it must be true. The Hall of Fat Fame. Mm. Because I want to reposition women and bigger women, because I think they're left out of history. Who would you put in a Hall of Fat Fame, Arabella? Who inspires you?
No, well, I mean, when I was starting out, and they were starting out at the same time, Dawn French, Joe Brand. Oh, but I always loved, and Bette Midler used to do her act, Sophie Tucker. She was an American music hall comedian.
Amazing.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, not particularly big inside. She was pretty big.
Yeah.
Mae West.
Mm.
You know, women like that. And if you look at those women of the 40s and 50s in those films, and they're all pretty curvy.
Yeah. And deliciously curvy as well.
I mean, I dare say they were being punished by the studios as well. But, yeah, I would say Dawn and Dawn French and Joe Brand and, you know, my contemporaries that were sort of unashamed and doing comedy ahead of me and not going, I better be thin and pretty.
Yeah.
So I'd put them in the Hall of Fame.
They're an excellent choice. And finally, Fatspiration. What advice would you give to our audience who've gone through or feeling, you know, like we all feel? Have you got words of wisdom or mantras that get you through?
If I could relive my life, I would say, and I would certainly say it to my daughter, well, and my son, but in particular to do with a woman, eat what you like, but understand why you're eating it.
Yeah.
And that is the key, because, of course, people like you and me who are better covered, I think I now have only just got to the stage where I go, yeah, by all means have that chocolate bar. Do you really want it? And are you going to be okay about how you feel after you've eaten it?
Mm.
So what happens now is I obviously, because I'm certainly not thin, I will eat a piece of chocolate. I never used to be able to keep chocolate in the house, for example, because I knew I'd just eat it all.
Yeah.
So what happens now is if I think, yeah, I am tired, I would like the lift that a square of chocolate is going to give me, and then I eat the square, but I don't eat the whole thing. And as I say, I'm obviously not thin, and I'm obviously not ever going to be thin. Well, I mean, I suppose I could if I ate nothing at all. But I think the advice I would give is be as nice to yourself as you possibly can. So if you want that thing, by all means eat it. If you are the girl that eats a bar of chocolate and gains weight, whereas your friend eats a bar of chocolate and never gains weight, just accept that you're different people and you've got different bodies. Just know why you're eating whatever you're eating.
Yeah.
Because by and large, certainly I overate. Wasn't that I just ate the, in inverted commas, wrong thing. I overate. And I know now why I was overeating, because I was miserable and judged exclusively on my size by the two people in the world that were supposed to protect me from a critical world, not be critical at home.
Now, let's do the shameless flogging bit. I hear you're going to Edinburgh, Arabella.
Thank you, I am. From the 12th to the 25th of August, you can see me do a show called Does My Mum Loom Big in This? I think you know what I've done there. At the Assembly Studio 2, 4 o'clock every day.
Fab. I can come and see your show.
Yeah.
Because the Scummy Mummies are doing their show at 7:50 at the Assembly Rooms called the Blue Room. So see both in one day.
And that would be a great day out.
Tickets are now available on the website, so do come along. And where can people follow you on the social medias?
I'm on Instagram and I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook, but I don't really do Facebook.
No.
That's for oldies, I'm told.
Yes,
my
mother's all over Facebook. Yes.
Yeah. Instagram and Twitter.
Excellent. And you're on the telly as well?
I am BBC Two? On the telly, but I'm not on the telly at the moment. But yeah. When I am, it's two doors down, BBC Two.
Excellent. Wonderful. You've been a delight and
a
wonder.
It's been a huge pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. Our wonderful producer today is, of course, Maddie Hickish. And the music you've listened to today is by my brother, John Thorne. Yes, he did it for free. He was very good. Anyway, thank you very much. Do rate, review and subscribe. And go love yourself, people. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.